CJMQ 88.9 FM in Sherbrooke, Quebec welcomes co-authors Mike Olton and Ed Griffin of the book Dystopia. Dystopia is a book about the prison system done in an entertaining and enlightening way, while leaving us with some very powerful messages.
Thank you very much for the interview, and to say your book is outstandingly fascinating, a real mind-provoking book.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear that. Would you just tell Mike that? He's sitting right here, too. I'd like to hear that.
Well, Mike, both you and Ed.
Hello.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hello. Who is this?
It's Maureen Dillon Teasdale. I'm speaking from CJMQ, the radio station here in Sherbrooke, Quebec. How are you doing?
Excellent. How are things out in Quebec?
Oh, they're just fine. That's fine. And you and Ed, you've done an outstanding job on this project of the book Dystopia. I have to tell you that it's one of the most interesting books I've read.
Oh, really?
Yes, and it's just, you know, it's a real eye-opener.
Well, Maureen, I really appreciate that. Thanks for that. That's amazing. We're getting some great feedback on this book, and I don't think Ed or I expected it to be this well-received.
Well, congratulations, and I'm really glad that it's getting some great feedback. Now, what are some of the other comments that people have said about the book?
Just kind of what you've said,
mm-hmm.
that it's kind of eye-opening, and, you know, they know about Ed from his numerous photo shoots in the newspaper and articles written about him in Vancouver Magazine, but they had no idea about what he really did about teaching creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
And for 23 years, I mean, that has astounded a lot of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he's been through so much in his life and, you know, being in the seminary and being a Catholic priest and then, you know, breaking out at 32 and
mm-hmm.
being the man he is now. So that kind of surprises them. And about me, they're really kind of surprised that, you know, I went through that whole Mexican thing and that the prison down there wasn't as gruesome as people kind of make it out to be. Right?
Mm-hmm. Now, Dystopia, now, how did you come up with the title of the book?
Well, we had a concept before called Inside Out.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike was the insider, and he was going to say there was some value in prison, and I, the outsider, was going to say that, well, there really wasn't much good in prison. I hadn't seen much beyond it being a crime school and a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
But that concept kind of died because some things happened to Mike that convinced him that my approach was better in a way, that prison really was dystopia, the opposite of utopia.
Mm-hmm.
Mike was denied parole about 2 years ago because his roommate had a cell phone, not him,
mm-hmm.
but his roommate.
Yes, I was reading that.
Yeah, and
mm-hmm.
the things that happened after that were so disheartening, and actually Mike ended up a lot calmer than I did. I was really angry with that whole scenario. The guy whose cell phone it is got out a month later,
mm-hmm.
and Mike spent 15 months more in jail.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of changed the whole thought behind the book. I mean, I did believe that, you know, prison was a necessary tool in our community that would kind of help people change their lives. I was thinking, you know, you take someone out of their destructive life and put them somewhere where they can sit and be with themselves and think about, you know, where they want to go with their lives. I mean, it's kind of like a retreat of sort, right? And,
okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I believed, and I used that, and that was really how I viewed jail for myself, was a chance to get away and just try to do something better with myself and try to improve my life. And then, you know, it's kind of strange because you try and you try and you try, and still you don't get the respect or you don't get the acknowledgement. And, you know, and then when something like that happens and you get blamed, you know, I tried so hard and I got blamed again for being a drug dealer, and that cell phone was mine, and there was no other option but, you know, blaming me.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of changed the whole perspective of the book.
Okay. Now, just to recap to our listeners, we're talking with Mike Olton and Ed Griffin today, co-wrote the book Dystopia. Now, Mike, I would assume that you would be more against prison, that you would be very bitter because you were the one who spent time in Mexican prison and in the Canadian prison system also.
Well, yeah, I was pretty bitter at first.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit, I really did consider myself a career criminal.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see myself going anywhere but, you know, back to a life of crime when I got out. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was strange. Ed has this way of influencing people. And, you know, it's funny in prison. You meet a ton of people that influence you to go the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
You don't meet many people who influence you to go the other way, the right way. And, you know, Ed's influence was so powerful over me that it really, really changed my way of thinking. And it kind of melted the bars around my soul, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
Because he introduced me to something that I didn't know I had. It was a talent to write.
Mm-hmm.
And just from that writing, I mean, that writing alone kind of opened my mind to other possibilities in my life, right?
But, Maureen, I want to add something there that Mike has changed me, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like many people that go into prison, I had an agenda.
I had,
you know, I wanted people to learn how to write so they themselves would tell the world what really goes on inside prisons. And I thought that they would then relay the idea that it really is dystopia inside prisons. But I was no different in some ways than the preacher who goes in and says you must get religion,
mm-hmm.
or I was no different than the administration who says you must reform. I had an agenda. And Mike kind of taught me to cool the agenda a little bit and
mm-hmm.
to just offer my services. I know how to write, and I know I can give this art to people, and giving people an art is what's so badly needed in prison, I think.
Exactly. Dystopia, you write on page 3, is a society of human misery, squalor, disease, terror, and overcrowding. It is the opposite of utopia. And you dedicated the book to the men and women who live in dystopia. So dystopia is relatively the prison system, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right, yes. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people really think that prisoners have it easy. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that's always bothered me. I've always heard it in the news. And you know, our government right now is trying to take steps to make it harder. But
mm-hmm.
what people don't realize is that a majority of the people in prison are ripped out of their homes and away from their families. And I know they've made bad choices, but, you know, being away from your family and your loved ones and your children, I mean, that makes it even harder. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you say we have it easy because, you know, we get television or video games or you know, other kind of diversion.
Or a gym.
I
mm-hmm.
mean, it's unfair to say that. You know, the guys have it really tough in there. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you're a 19-year-old kid and you come into a Canadian penitentiary, you have two choices. You can try to make your life better by going to the gym or writing or what have you, or you can go use drugs and get high and try to, you know, forget about your problem.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people take that one route. They go to get high, and it's sad because the prison doesn't offer any alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, what makes it a dystopia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from my perspective, Maureen, I wanted to say that I'm definitely against crime. And some people might think I'm, you know, soft on crime. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I want the prison system to really do what it's supposed to do, is change people. But right now, it's a crime school, and it's just a warehouse. A guy who goes in there, he's just got to live for 5 years, do his time, and get out. And in that 5 years, he learns a lot more, how to do crime better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I want real change, and I that's probably going to cost more money, and it's going to mean a lot more education for the people who work there.
That's right, and I get the feeling that both of you feel like the prison system, the Canadian one, isn't in for change, at least not in the future right now.
Well, I don't see much
mm-hmm.
change happening. I think there are many people in the prison system that want change and know that something is wrong, but maybe they just haven't caused it yet or hasn't happened yet. But I certainly would have to say that the Canadian prison system is far better than the American system. I worked in both,
mm-hmm.
and I would compliment the Canadian system as being better than the American system, but again, not as good as the European system.
Okay, so the European system is
advanced. It also makes it, though, and we know it's not going to change, and a lot of the inmates inside know that's not going to change. I mean, I think there's a smoking, non-smoking ban is coming up in the near future, and People are, you know, going to be a little upset about that, and who knows, there's probably going to be a little bit of trouble in the prisons because of it, but people know that it's not going to change. But what's really great is that there's a group of inmates inside every single prison in Canada, and some of them are lifers. Most of these groups are made up of guys who have life sentences.
Okay.
And they go out of their way to help out people, and it's a little known fact about prisoners. Is that these guys go out of their way on a daily basis to try and help guys see the truth and to see the light, so to speak, and try to help them put their lives on track. And it's in every single prison across Canada, and these guys try hard because they don't want to see people coming back all the time. And they
mm-hmm.
don't want it to be a revolving door. You know, if the prison isn't going to help these guys get rehabilitated, so to speak, and these group of inmates do it, and that's something people need to know, that not all these guys are just, they're not all vicious criminals with no hope to change. I mean, these people do believe in change, and they do try every day, right?
Okay, great. And from what I read in the book, like, no matter what you're in for, you get treated pretty much the same in the shackles, different things like that.
Yeah, there's no exception to the rule. No one is special inside prison.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I've always said, you know, when you come to prison,
mm-hmm.
everybody's on an equal level. Nobody's bigger or better or more special. Everybody is the same. We're all down there in the same. And it's the small percentage of people that kind of step up and make a change in their lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
That'll change your life.
Mm-hmm.
Maureen, the day that Mike was denied parole,
yes,
because of that cell phone,
mm-hmm.
I, in my heart, determined that my view on prisons had to come out. And I know our book is just starting, and it's hard to get a hold of, and the only contact I know that your audience might be able to get it is through Amazon.ca.
Okay.
But hopefully it'll get more carried in other places. But right now, it's only available on Amazon.ca, and it's 1950 or so in there. And I really hope that both our views can... I want to be part of the debate about the future of prison.
Okay, that's great. So, Ed, you basically changed Mike's life, according to what I read in the book. So.
Well,
and you are such an unlikely pair to become friends, too, because one of you is a little bit older, the other one's younger. And, Ed, you were a priest at one time, and Mike, you had problems from the very time you were small. So I think the system started failing you from the time you were a child.
Yeah, it did. You know, I believe in the 80s that everything was about medication.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was luckily actually that I was a rebel from the beginning of my life. I denied taking the medication that they tried to give me. So
mm-hmm.
That kind of helped me now into the future. But yeah, I mean, the system was all about just punishment, and it really didn't do me any good. You know, what I believe I needed as a kid was some understanding. Just give me an avenue or a venue to be creative and express myself, and I think things would have been fine. And I think that's why Ed has been such a great influence on me. The day I walked into his classroom, he let me be myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a challenge to let him be himself.
That's what I read, yeah. He was an extrovert.
He let me just express myself the way that I wanted to, and by doing that, it actually encouraged me to take up the writing and be serious about the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been a great friendship ever since. You know, I always say that Ed is a young old man, and I'm a old young man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that, too, because you've been through so much, Mike. And Ed, your views are certainly radical, and they're new. I mean, they're not with the norm for your age group, so that's fantastic.
And actually, Maureen, I think my insights, actually, and my goals in life come from the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And a perceptive person recently told me that I haven't really changed very much. I don't work for the Catholic Church anymore,
mm-hmm.
but the same kind of things I was educated to do as a Catholic priest and the same goals that I learned as a priest and in the seminary, I'm still trying to fulfill today.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in a different context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you've done a fantastic job writing the book. How long did it take to actually write the book?
I think we've been at this about 5 years, Mike, haven't we?
Yeah, about that.
Okay, so 5 years. So this has certainly helped you, Mike, when you came out of the system, too, to focus on something, because as I was reading, there's not a lot of support once you're out there.
Right, right. There's not a lot of support in prison and out of prison. And, you know, frankly, we're going to have to spend more money to really do a job. But then when we do a good job in prison, we won't have those repeat costs so much.
Mm-hmm, because there are so many repeat offenders in that, just because it's a safe haven after a while.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really, really need to prepare guys and girls, men and women, for the street. When you're locked down for a numerous amount of years, 5, 10 years, whatever it is, you need to prepare people for the changes that have happened in the world and in the community. And that's one thing that they don't really do. They help you deal with your anger, and they help you deal with emotions, and they help you deal with, you know, making decisions whether to do a crime or not. But they miss out on the simple things that really affect the guy when he's out, like managing a bank book
or the internet.
Not, you know, you can't even. I've known so many people inside who've never been online. And in our day and age, that is just bizarre, you know, with the emails and downloading music and little simple things like that are ingrained in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys miss out on that. They are left behind in prison. And these are some of the things, that have to be taught.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how many hours that prisoners do spend in their cells. I was quite amazed by that.
It's amazing how many, 30, 40, 50-year-old people you see playing video games and wasting away years playing video games. And, you know, I know that it's just a diversion from what's going on in your life, that, you know, you have to stay in jail for 10 years. I understand that, but it'd be great if we could really reconstruct this person that we put in prison for 10 years. Let's turn this person into a functional human being, and when we release him into the community, he can just jump right in and with 2 feet and actually get going, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they have a lot of good programs for him in the prison, anger management and so forth, but very few arts. And I think art approaches people with a different message than programs. Programs say, you're sick, you need help, we're going to help you. Whereas art says, you have talent, and we want to help you develop it. Music, photography, painting, music is the one that bothers me the most. There's no music in prison.
Just okay.
Even background music, elevator music, which helps everybody keep calm and keep. It's not done. It's not there. And there's no music courses, art courses. I think art is very rehabilitative.
It is, and I can understand how the creative writing was certainly an outlet, because you dress the same, and even you don't make eye contact, a lot of different things like that we don't think about. So through the creative writing, you were actually able to express yourself, get the men to express themselves, and it was a lot of therapy.
It also builds confidence, you know, which is the big one that people don't see. That guys in jail and women in jail lose their confidence. They're meant to believe that they're worthless and that the society doesn't want them. And, you know, writing will bring that confidence back out. And, you know, when you're able to say what you feel inside, you either put it down on paper or say it out loud, it just renews that confidence in yourself. That's what the arts do. And Ed's right. You know, we don't have enough of that. Arts aren't supported. It's all about reprogramming. And, you know, if people really want to make change, we have to put the investment back into the human being. It's not changing the human being, it's bringing out the good in the human being.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Maureen, I don't want you to get the impression, or your listeners to get the impression, that our book is a lot of theory. Our book is mainly stories, as you know.
Exactly.
And we just try to tell stories about people we met, and people that I met, and people that Mike met.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through stories we learn what reality is really like inside of prison.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, this was an entertaining book about prison. And I know a lot of books have been written by prisoners and what have you that is slamming the system. And this isn't really slamming the system. What it is telling, you know, Ed and I are telling our stories, like you said, in story form.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want you to be entertained, but at the same time, I want to leave you with some thoughts about, you know, what really goes on inside there.
the tragedy to me, Maureen, is to go to the criminal justice system of the library and see wonderful books and that have all the answers in them. But the spines on those books haven't been cracked to see, you know, the answers sitting there, but nobody reading them.
Okay, and I think you've done a wonderful job of doing that, too. The book is a very easy read. It's divided into five different books, and some of the chapters Mike has written, some of the chapters Ed has written, so you get the two different types of personalities there, and it's written in a lot of stories, too, as you say, so it's entertaining, and it's also has a lot of messages in the book.
Right.
Yeah. So how are you doing, Mike, since you've been released in last July, I believe?
Yeah, it was in July.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing awesome. Ed and I meet once a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he keeps me grounded, which is great. And
mm-hmm.
Mike keeps me grounded.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And you know, I've been doing great. I work as an interactive DJ at some pubs
mm-hmm.
Across the Lower Mainland.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get into the entertainment business somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about 23 scripts, full-length films when I was in prison, and
mm-hmm.
I developed two TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my focus moving over here to Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
That you know I'm going to somehow get into the entertainment business and hopefully be a writer for a television show or for movies. So it keeps me focused knowing that, you know, that I have some goals and stuff. And, you know, actually writing this book kind of helped me with being disciplined and helped me with my focus. So it's pretty good. It's a little different getting up and going to work every day, I have to admit. I have a new respect for 9-to-5ers, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
and I have a new respect for money. So,
mm-hmm.
so, but other than that, you know, I always say to people, it's the hardest thing getting out of prison and trying to set your life straight because nothing is the same as your previous life.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite chapters of Mike's was the chapter Tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike talked about a 6-month period where he went out, got out of jail, and failed, and went back in, and
mm-hmm.
then built himself back up after that. Many guys fail and say, the hell with it, and that's the end of it. But Mike built himself up. That was a hard blow to overcome.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah.
You know, it was mm-hmm. it was in 2004, and it was the toughest time in my life, you know, after being in prison for 8 years,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, getting out and trying to get back in the workforce, and you know, the worst part was I didn't get out with a positive attitude. I got out being stressful, being stressed out, and thinking that things weren't going to work for me, and I had a negative outlook on life, and I just went downhill from there,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, but I got back out again, and I'm feeling great, feeling positive, and just hoping that people buy this book and enjoy the book and get a hold of us on our website.
Oh, great, and yeah. The website address?
It's ed@edgriffin.net,
mm-hmm.
and Griffin is G-R-I-F-F-I-N,
mm-hmm.
ed@edgriffin.net, and that's my website, but our book is the first thing on there.
Okay, and people can write in to you either.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Great. Have you...
Mike's address is on there, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you click under the dystopia book,
mm-hmm.
you can get a hold of Mike as well as me. And, again, it's available at Amazon.ca.
Well, it's a fantastic story, Dystopia, co-authors Ed Griffin and Mike Olton. So I'm really glad that the book is doing well. And after you have the book printed up and you go and read it, are you a little surprised by what you've lived through once you start reading it in print? Or?
Right, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that I've been doing this for 23 years, and I went in with kind of naive ideas that I was going to cause a revolution. And,
mm-hmm.
and really, I walked out with a friend.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm. What really surprises me is that Ed went through this life-changing experience at age 30, 32. Was it 30?
Yeah, 31 or so. 31.
And,
priesthood, yeah.
And, you know, I'm going through the same thing at the same age as him. Like, he's taking a corner. He took a corner at 31, and now I'm taking a corner at 31. And it's just kind of unique. I think that's where we relate to each other the most because, you know, it's at this point where our lives took this drastic change for the better, I believe. and I think we have a mutual respect for each other.
I think so. I think you have a fantastic relationship, and it just shows the difference it can make just reaching out to somebody, and it's just, it's a fantastic story. Yeah. I'm really glad that it's receiving a lot of positive reviews. Anything else that the two of you would like to mention about?
I'd just like to thank you for taking time to talk to us. I think that's really nice, and I hope you and your readers and your listeners will enjoy the book.
I think that your listeners, if you still have a, if you're still skeptical about prison and prisoners and the justice system, take a vested interest in what is going on in our prisons and take an interest in the system. Go in there. Anybody can volunteer and go into a prison and go to meet people and talk to convicts and figure it out for yourself if what we're doing is the best way or if we
good,
do need
good
changes.
Good point.
Because I'll tell you right now, if you want to volunteer and go into a prison, the prisoners will accept you like one of their own. They will treat you with respect. You'll get nothing but, you know, great conversation, and you'll learn a lot about these people. And, you know, people think it's violent and, you know, they're going to have problems. That's not true. Let me tell you from firsthand knowledge,
right.
It's not true. You will meet some of the most fascinating people that you'll ever meet right inside of our prison.
Maureen, we have twice a year we have Writers' Weekends at our prison, and we bring in writers from the outside to meet with writers on the inside over a weekend, and it's a great experience for people to come in, and they learn that maybe the writers in prison are a little different, maybe they're not the average guy, but people learn that prison, what it's really like, and they hear the real stories.
Okay, well, that's certainly an eye-opener to everybody, too, and I think that people have to become involved a lot more.
Great.
Great. I'm really looking forward to seeing this in a movie, Mike, too. And
well, there's a screenplay available for this, and it's I really believe it would make a great movie, and I've always thought that. It was amazing. As I was living it down in Mexico, I'm thinking, what's going to happen to me next? Because everything, I honestly believe all that happened for a reason. I know a lot of guys from prison probably would never say this, especially on radio, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Going to prison for that 8 years was, to this day, well, besides meeting you, Ed, all right. It's the best thing that ever happened to me because it gave me direction. It gave me inspiration.
It changed your life.
It changed my life, and it gave me a great story to tell that I think a lot of writers would die for, literally. You know, so it was awesome.
Yeah, you had a lot of contacts in there, and I almost get the impression that the Mexican prison system was a little bit easier than the Quebec one.
No, I've been to, it says in the book, I write a little bit about the Quebec about the Quebec prison, and you know what, it was, I have to say that, even with the BC prison, the Mexican people really actually care, and you know, a lot of these families took me under their wing and looked after me, and the men in there, you know, all stuck together, and everybody tried to make a really bad situation better, and you know.
The way Mike tells it, the Mexican prisons were more humane.
Very much so.
They were poorer in their physical characteristics, but more humane.
Yeah, down there you are definitely a human being, and as compared to up here where you're a cattle, you know, you're branded and shoved in a pen, and that's it, your paycheck. And it's sad to say that, and I don't say that with any malicious intention. It's just how it is, you know, and it's and that's kind of the point we're trying to make, that, you know, we don't have it right here. Let's put the humanity back into our prisons and let's really help people, right?
Oh, that's a great message. Okay, well, I want to thank you both and wish you all the luck. And it's just a...
Thank you, Maureen.
Yeah, well, thank
Pleasure
you.
To talk to you.
Okay, all the best to both of you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.